Dr. Molly Graham died last.
In the US, police brutality, the killing of a black teenager,
and shot him in the chest.
Racism on the rise in the UK. Highlights from Iran's historic 33rd anniversary of the Islamic Revolution. Another historic achievement from Iran, the mastering of the nuclear fuel cycle. And the situation in Syria got complicated.
We want freedom. We must be liberated from this regime.
Hello and welcome to Reality Check, the only program that wraps up the week for you in 25 minutes. So let's get started. In the United States, two deaths occurred at the hands of U.S. security this past week. First, the police killing of an 18-year-old in New York City on Friday, the week before, where Marley Graham, a black teenager, was unarmed when he was shot dead, which raised concerns over aggressive tactics used by the U.S. police, already under fire for their violent crackdown on anti-Wall Street protesters, including discrimination.
18-year-old Ramali Graham died last Thursday after a police officer chased him to his grandmother's apartment and shot him in the chest, in front of his family. Police claimed the teenager was trying to flush down a pack of marijuana when shot. Lawyers say even if he was carrying drugs, it would not have justified his killing. Graham was unarmed at the time of the shooting, and police did not have a warrant to enter the home. The lawyer of the victim's family say NYPD's fatal confrontation was, quote, unlawful.
Racism is not a problem restricted to the United States. There are worrying signs that it is on the increase in Britain. Dozens of videos recently appeared on YouTube revealing shocking racist incidents on the country's transport system. Rosha Mama Saleh reported on that from London.
Go back to where you come from. Go back to Nicaragua, or wherever you come from.
34-year-old Emma West insults fellow passengers on a London tram last November. She says Britain is nothing now because of foreigners.
Yes, my great country. You're black.
West was later charged with a racially aggravated public order offence and will go on trial later this week.
A lot's not your f***ing lie, and if you're illegal.
And the shocking videos keep on coming. Last week, another emerged of an unidentified woman abusing passengers on the London Underground. Again, she insults foreigners, and again, most witnesses stand by and do nothing. But eventually, a fellow passenger, an unidentified Pakistani man, finds a novel way of responding to the abuse.
A cursory glance at a platform such as YouTube will reveal lots of shockingly racist incidents that have happened on the streets of Britain. The country may have come a long way since the 1980s when it was okay to be openly racist, but it's still clear that many people hold openly and deeply held racist and Islamophobic views. And the economic recession and a government which invades Muslim countries doesn't help matters either. Roshan Mohammed Saleh, Press TV, London.
In news from Occupy Wall Street, organizers and protesters in the U.S. were hard at work planning massive spring demonstrations across the United States and the world, for that matter, as the winter allowed the movement to work through some growing pains.
Police boots on protesters' necks and journalists getting beaten and arrested. These are some of the images of late last year as the Occupy Wall Street movement took the U.S. by storm. The scene for mid-February, however, is different, one of talking, planning, and organizing, and it's up to the General Assembly to try to hold it all together. There are as many groups meeting as there are causes, however, with working groups on arts and culture, visions and goals, direct actions, and dozens of others. The Occupy Farms working group is trying to teach people to grow their own food in an economy that continues to deteriorate.
teaching people how to be sustainable for themselves. For when all this crashes around us, this terrible eating economy that's eating itself up, we have a place to learn, to grow, to teach each other how to live with ourselves, and grow for ourselves.
So many working groups, many different ideas, many objectives. It begs the question, has Occupy become too diluted? We spoke to one original organizer who told us what to look for not only in the coming year, but over the next decade.
We've just consensed on a calendar of escalation of different direct actions that all lead up to May 1st, which is going to be a day of celebration. So May 1st, you're going to see the Occupy community coming out of the woodwork, and we're just sort of, you know, marshaling our resources for winter and allowing the media attention to go to the real story, which is on how the Occupy is spreading.
In news from Iran, it was all about Iran's achievements. First, some highlights from Saturday when Iran marked the 33rd anniversary of the Islamic Revolution.
Iranians nationwide celebrating the Islamic Revolution anniversary. Millions of Iranians took to the streets all across the country to mark the 33rd victory anniversary of the Islamic Revolution back in 1979. Holding up placards and chanting slogans in support of the Islamic Revolution, people from different walks of life once again renewed allegiance with the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, the late Imam Khomeini.
I've come here not only to celebrate the anniversary of the Islamic Revolution, but also to voice my support for the scientific movement and the independence of our country from bullying powers.
On this day, high-ranking Iranian officials also joined the ranks of demonstrators to unanimously throw support behind the Islamic Republic of Iran, among them heads of the three branches of government.
To Iranians, the Islamic Revolution is the symbol of resistance against domineering powers. And every year, millions of Iranians all across the country take out to the streets to celebrate their independence gained 33 years ago.
Addressing millions of demonstrators in Tehran, President Ahmadinejad said the Iranian nation has made significant progress despite Western pressure.
همه فشارها را وارد کردند تا ملت ایران هسته ای نشود ان شاء الله ظرف چند روز آینده دنیا شاهد چند افتتاح چند دستاورد بسیار بزرگ در عرصه هسته ای خواهد بود.
Meanwhile, Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh, who is on an official visit to Iran, also addressed the crowd on the occasion, saying Palestinians will never recognize an Israeli entity.
Israel is trying to pressure the Palestinian people by imposing a siege on the Gaza Strip, but Palestinians will continue their struggle until the liberation of all Palestinian lands from occupation, and Palestinians will never recognize an Israeli entity.
Experts say since its establishment 33 years ago, the Islamic Revolution has become a source of inspiration for all freedom-seeking nations across the globe, and the Islamic Awakening movement, which has swept regional countries, is the result of the lessons learned from Iran's Islamic Revolution. Samar Kujuri, Press TV, Tehran.
Another achievement came on Wednesday when Iran unveiled new nuclear projects, including a fourth generation of domestically made uranium enrichment centrifuges, showcasing Iran's abilities to master the nuclear fuel cycle.
President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad overseeing loading of fuel assemblies for 20% enriched uranium into Iran's research reactor. The reactor produces radioisotopes used to produce medications for thousands of cancer patients in Iran. Iran requested the International Atomic Energy Agency last year to help it buy the fuel assemblies from other countries, but the agency's foot-dragging forced Tehran to start producing the assemblies. Iran also unveiled a new generation of centrifuges that enrich uranium at a faster pace in the central city of Natanz. The new centrifuges occupy less space and produce less waste. Iranian experts have manufactured some 3,000 of these centrifuges. They are now operating along with other 6,000 centrifuges at Natanz enrichment facility. This has increased Iran's production of 3.5% enriched uranium by 50%. All of today's projects were unveiled by the families of Iran's assassinated scientists, including the father of Mostafa Ahmadi Roshan, murdered by a bomb blast last month.
Looking at U.S.'s posturing of its funds. On Tuesday, U.S. President Barack Obama proposed a $3.8 trillion budget plan, which focused on aggressive spending and higher taxes on the rich.
But the main idea in the budget is this. At a time when our economy is growing and creating jobs at a faster clip, we've got to do everything in our power to keep this recovery on track.
I'm bitterly disappointed in two respects. Number one, the president told us that at the end of his first term, he would cut the deficit in half. And instead, we have our nation's first, second, third, and fourth trillion-dollar deficits. Second of all, I mean, there's a debt crisis, and the president's budget doesn't deal with it. And what we have, again, are the largest debt we've had as a percentage of our economy since World War II.
Now, this is while Press TV Washington correspondent Colin Campbell reported quite the contrary to be true about the pace of U.S.'s economic recovery. Well, since figures from the U.S. Labor Department did not match the latest data coming from the White House, as unemployment was a lot higher than what was reported.
Because we're not healing. The patient is not healing. The patient's been in the hospital for 4 years now, and it's not getting any better. The policies are the problem, this fiscal policy problem.
But the White House is preparing to release unemployment figures designed to show the U.S. economy is turning around. President Obama is expected to forecast an unemployment rate close to 8.9% in 2012 for his annual budget to be released Monday. But White House officials say the projection is actually lower. White House official Alan Krueger said in a statement issued by the White House, the forecast of the unemployment rate that will accompany the budget should be considered stale and out of date.
And yet, the U.S. announced plans to allocate special funding for Middle Eastern and North African countries going through political upheavals. Well, officials said the money was going to be used for boosting political reforms. That in countries like Syria, Yemen, Tunisia, and Egypt, however, some analysts were skeptical about Washington's claim.
The U.S. President Barack Obama has requested nearly $800 million from Congress in his budget plan for fiscal year 2013. Obama claims he needs the money for supporting political reform in Middle Eastern and North African countries swept up in anti-government uprisings. State Department officials have also said the bulk of the money would be new and spent on such initiatives in countries like Syria, Egypt, Tunisia, and Yemen. However, they said at this stage, it's unclear how the money would be allocated.
Well, most of this money is going to be spent against regimes that are at odds with the United States, such as the Syrian government or now maybe the Egyptian government.
In an article published last April, New York Times reported that U.S.-backed groups had actively been involved in promoting democracy in Arab states. The article cited organizations like International Republican Institute, the National Democratic Institute, and Freedom House as non-governmental organizations that are using the taxpayers' money to train movement leaders in these countries. The report sparked outrage among most activists in countries like Egypt, who said Washington was also training the intelligence services personnel responsible for harassment and jailing of anti-government protesters.
The Syrian situation appeared to get more and more complicated with different dynamics to its problems.
If we want freedom, we must be liberated from this regime. If we want justice, we must retaliate against this regime.
In the 8-minute video message, Zawahiri called for supporting the military campaign in Syria to remove the current government, which he referred to as being anti-Islam. His stance appears to confirm the Syrian government's earlier claims that al-Qaeda has been involved in a foreign-backed armed campaign against Damascus. A recent report cited unnamed American officials as saying that al-Qaeda's Iraqi branch was likely to have carried out bombings in Syria's city of Aleppo that left dozens killed. Iraqi Deputy Interior Minister Adnan al-Assadi confirmed the report. It is not just al-Qaeda that wants the Syrian government toppled. After failing to pass a resolution against Syria at the UN Security Council, the US publicly announced that it is seeking alternative options to bring Assad's government down. Some American officials clearly support arming the Syrian opposition.
I think it's time to give them help, medical help first, and then I'd give them training, I'd give them communications equipment, and then ultimately I'd give them weapons.
As fighting between Syrian government forces and armed groups rages on, the Arab League also joined the American-backed campaign to topple Assad. On Sunday, foreign ministers and senior officials of the pan-Arab body met in Cairo to discuss their next move on Syria. They called for an end to all diplomatic ties with Damascus and urged the UN Security Council to send troops to the country. Russia and China earlier vetoed a draft resolution proposed by the Arab League, which called on Assad to step down. Moscow and Beijing described the draft as a plot to change the government in Syria. Moscow insists that any changes in Syria need to be implemented through dialogue between the Syrian opposition and the government. Damascus has already taken steps to calm the situation. On Sunday, the Syrian president received a new draft constitution from a national committee charged with drawing up the document. Assad called the move the most important stage of the reforms and laws that have already been issued.
It has been 1 year since Bahrainis took to the streets demanding justice from the Al-Khalifa rulers. The movement is still on its feet, although it has not been getting the amount of international attention that other Arab uprisings have had. Well, Press TV looked at how far the Bahraini revolution came during the past year and what lies ahead for another dictatorial regime facing the wrath of its people.
Chanting Allahu Akbar, or God is greatest, people in burial shroud flood the streets across Bahrain to mark the first anniversary of the revolution against the Al-Khalifa dynasty. The demonstrators marched towards the Pearl Square in the capital Manama, where regime forces unleashed a brutal crackdown on the protesters last year when the uprising began. Nothing has changed since then, despite promises of reforms by officials. The regime forces use force to nip any movement in the bud. King Hamad, who has been the target of all anti-regime slogans, has once again ruled out any room for dissent. He says the constitution does not recognize organized opposition. Relations between the Al-Khalifa regime and its ally, the U.S., has remained cordial since the uprising began in mid-February 2011. Latest reports say Washington has supplied the Manama regime with arms all through the uprising. The supplies include toxic tear gas, which has so far suffocated several demonstrators to death. Dozens of people have lost their lives and thousands have been put in jail and abused. Those tortured in prison include professionals like doctors and nurses. Their crime was treating Bahraini protesters injured by the regime forces. The people are angry at the U.S. for its continued support for the Al-Khalifa regime, despite its claims of supporting human rights. They're also angry at the Saudi regime for its intervention in Bahrain with the aim of crushing the uprising there. Both the Bahraini and Saudi regimes are key U.S. allies in the Persian Gulf region.
A look now at a fascinating 12-year-old that was featured in the program Remember Palestine. Well, fascinating since, well, it showed how even a young girl like her can make a difference in the Palestinian cause.
While other 12-year-olds are shopping and talking about the latest fashion trends, Malo Manning gets involved in political rallies, blogs about human rights, and gives speeches in front of hundreds of people. I'm going to meet her to find out why.
Malo writes a blog about women and children's rights.
In her latest entries, she comments on the risks of capitalism and urges the British government to rethink the welfare reform bill, which caps the amount paid to families in benefits. Melo, looking around your room, it's like the room of any other 12-year-old, but what is it that makes you different?
I involve politics with everything that I do. Politics is part of my life. My mum grew up in Asia and she witnessed suffering and poverty, and so I've been heavily marked with the view of fighting for justice and equality.
Her interest in Palestine started when she read about the suffering of children in Gaza, troubled by their experiences of death and destruction. She wrote a poem in solidarity with them, which she recited at an event remembering the devastation caused by Israel's Operation Cast Lead.
You don't want the blockades or the grenades. It's wrong you have to play with bullets, which rain down like comets. Your siblings are dead. You don't like to think about how much they bled. You still have nightmares where no one ever dares to save you from the soldiers, the poor children of Gaza.
Time now for a quick look at some of the other news that made headlines from around the world. First, Israel blamed Iran for a series of bomb attacks targeting its embassy staff in India and in Georgia. Tel Aviv also blamed Iran for explosions in the Thai capital, Bangkok. Tehran dismissed all the allegations.
Israeli embassy staff in New Delhi and Tbilisi were targeted by car bomb attacks on Monday. The bomb in New Delhi exploded, injuring a number of people. Georgian police managed to disable the explosive device attached to the car of an Israeli embassy employee. The alleged bomb, which turned out to be a grenade, was reported by the embassy's driver. Then on Tuesday, the Thai capital was the target of more attacks. In Bangkok, a man hurled a grenade at Thai police and a cab, injuring himself and a number of others. The nationality of the man has been the cause of great controversy. Bangkok police say they have found Iranian identification on him. Israel has been quick to take advantage of this, blaming Tehran for being behind the attacks in all three cities.
The elements behind these attacks were Iran and its proxy, Hezbollah.
When it comes to the explosions which we're seeing in India and Georgia and Thailand, these blasts or explosions which we heard of in the media, I can assure you that we in Hezbollah, we have nothing to do with this.
After months of talks, on Monday, the Greece parliament approved the controversial new round of austerity measures. Street battles between police and protesters resulted that left dozens injured with several buildings set ablaze. However, at the end, it didn't matter since the lenders backed out of the loan, at least for now.
Buildings engulfed in flames and huge plumes of smoke in the night sky. The Greek parliament's approval of an unpopular package of cuts comes as historic cinemas, cafes and shops are up in flames in central Athens. Black-masked protesters hurled petrol bombs at police, which responded with stun grenades and tear gas. Cuts of 3.3 billion euros will wipe out around 100 billion euros from Greece's 350 billion euro debt, reducing the country's massive debt burden to 120% of its GDP. Greek Prime Minister Lucas Papademos backed a plan and warned of chaos in case it was rejected.
And finally, U.S.-led NATO forces in Afghanistan admitted to last week's killing of 8 young Afghan civilians. Which puts the question, has an Afghan life become so worthless 10 years after the U.S.-led invasion of that country?
I would like to first express our most sincere condolences to the families and loved ones of the 8 victims of this small community, in which 8 young Afghans lost their lives as a result of an airstrike by coalition forces.
U.S. actor, director Sean Stone conversed to Islam in Iran, got the attention of not only Iranians, but also audiences worldwide. Not only since he is son of famous director Oliver Stone, but because of him choosing to convert to Islam after visiting Iran.
This article on PressTV.ir said that Stone converted to Islam during a religious ceremony in Iran. Stone became a Shia Muslim and chose to be known by the Muslim first name Ali, as announced at the ceremony held in the Iranian historical city of Isfahan on February 14. The conversion to Islam is not abandoning Christianity or Judaism, which I was born with, Stone said. It means I've accepted Muhammad, may peace be upon him, and other prophets. Born to a Jewish father and Christian mother, Stone did not say why he converted to Islam. Stone, who visited Iran several months ago, said he needed to know more about Persian culture and civilization and become familiar with Iranian traditions and rituals. Stone referred to Iran as one of Asia's major filmmaking centers, saying that he would like to introduce Persian culture and civilization to the West. Well, it was also reported on PressTV.ir that Sean Stone will be starring in an Iranian film in the near future.
And that was a snapshot look at the events from this past week as featured on Press TV. Repeats of everything you just saw is on PressTV.ir and on YouTube, Press TV Global News. Drop us a line, why don't you, and tell us what you thought of this week's edition. Our email address, realitycheck@presstv.ir. See you next week.